the fact that we are bringing in machines to truly take over the task of fighting our human wars for us, it's a big deal. And it's something that I think historians, you know, if we're so lucky as to be around hundreds of years from now, historians are going to want to know about this moment, going to want to write about this moment. And yet, when I went around Washington, D.C., and, you know, I work in the world of public policy and defense, no one was talking about this moment. No one was trying to capture it. And I think it was because it seemed a little too sci-fi. But guess what? You know, all sorts of things seemed like sci-fi at the time. You know, earlier we talked about how the atomic bomb was something that was once dismissed as just sci-fi and then it became real. Or tanks, you know, first appeared in science fiction. They were called land ironclads. And then just a couple years later, they were used. And so my sense is that, you know, something really big is going on. Another thing from science fiction, in this case robotics, is moving into war. And it's something really historic because it changes not only how we fight, but who. At the most fundamental level, I mean, think of it this way. You know, humans have had a monopoly on war for 5,000 years. We don't anymore. And so I wanted to capture that moment. And so I went around, you know, interviewing anyone and everyone involved. You know, everything from, you know, we talked about the scientists to science fiction authors who inspire them, all ranks in the military, from, you know, privates and specialists, enlisted men and women, all the way up to four-star generals, every single service secretary, you know, secretary of the Air Force, Army and Navy, politicians, went out in the Middle East and interviewed news editors there. There's a scene in the book where I'm interviewing a Lebanese news editor. He's in Beirut mm-hmm. while Israeli drones are flying overhead. And so I just wanted to capture that moment and tell those stories. And then, you know, the final goal of it was I thought by telling those stories, capturing that moment, it wouldn't just be interesting, but, you know, we could shine a light on some of the bigger things that are going on out there today.
Where do you see robotics, let's say, in the next 20 years?
One of the people I interviewed is a futurist named Ray Kurzweil. And he, I think, really encapsulates this well, where he explores the implications of Moore's Law, you know, the fact that you can pack more and more computing power into microchips, the fact that, you know, greeting cards that play little songs in them that you can buy at Target have more computing power than the entire U.S. military had in 1960. And so what happens when you play that forward? And he basically said, we'll get to the point where our systems are a billion times more powerful than they are today. And he doesn't mean, you know, billion like the, you know, Austin Powers, you know, Dr. Evil, you know, 1 billion, I mean, that it's a fake number. He really means take the computing power today and multiply it times a billion. And the point that he made is that at a certain point in time, and maybe it's 20 years, maybe it's 30 years, there's a lot of different predictions on this, you hit what they call the singularity. You hit a moment where the change is just so much, the numbers become so big that they're almost meaningless that you can't predict what's going to happen next.
It could go either way, right?
Exactly. And he thinks that the singularity is going to work out great for humanity, that when you get strong AI, that is, you know, artificial intelligence like they have in the movies, you know, where it really is smarter than a person, that it's going to usher in a new world of wonder. Other people think, you know what, we could be inventing the things that are going to take over from us. And it's sort of weird to, you know, robot scientists joke about how they may be building this. You know, I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't even know if we'll ever reach that point. What was really amazing to me, though, is that we're already getting to all sorts of these questions about, you know, where we're headed. What are the laws? How do you use them in war? They're already happening right now with systems that are kind of like the Model T Ford in automobile history. You know, they're They're good, but they're early. And so what happens when you get to the next generation, and then when the next generation is, you know, 5, 10, 20 years off?
Absolutely. When these robots, well, first of all, tell me about the method of these scientists and researchers who are making these things. How are they coming up with this? Is it all computer driven?
A lot of them. So they, one of the things that's interesting about this is that it's very different than, say, how the atomic bomb was invented, where it was, you know, done in a secret desert lab.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, for example, Area 51 and all that stuff. With robotics, and that's what it made my job of research a lot easier, it's happening right in front of us. I would go visit.
And it's everything. Your stove is a robot now. Your microwave is a robot. Your dishwasher is a robot. Everything's a robot because they do things. They may not walk around, but they are robots, aren't they?
Well, you're getting to systems where it's kind of like what happened, you know, what you were saying there with computers. I mean, we don't call our microwave oven a computer, but it has computers in it.
Yeah.
The same way with, the new Lexuses and Mercedes-Benz have crash avoidance systems. We don't call it a robot, but it's basically a part of the car that takes over when the human does something stupid, like, you know, doesn't look in their rear in their blind spot, or, you know, on the Lexus, it can parallel park for itself.